Thursday, August 1st. Today, as the war in Europe enters its 12th month, there are reports of new German bombing raids on the British Isles and new counterblows by British planes against German objectives. Since midnight, warships of the British Navy have patrolled the Atlantic Ocean in the new extension of their blockade from the Arctic to North Africa. Now for the news direct from London. London and Berlin. Afterwards, more news by Linton Wells in New York. First, the report from the British capital by Larry Lesser.
This is London. It was stated authoritatively in London today that six of the British subjects arrested in Japan have now been released. It is understood that this leaves seven still under arrest. The Royal Air Force had a busy night, attempting to intercept the few German raiders which crossed the British coast between midnight and dawn. This is what the official communique says. Enemy aircraft dropped bombs at a few points in the neighborhood of the Thames Estuary and the Bristol Channel last night. Some of the houses were slightly damaged. No casualties have been reported. During an engagement early in the evening, the RAF shot down a German fighter, but lost two of their own pursuit planes. Reports from Spain say that Gibraltar was heavily bombed last night. It was said that the bomb explosions could be heard for a long distance within Spanish territory. Another Spanish report states that a British battle squadron sailed out of Gibraltar Harbor yesterday. The announcer said that the battle squadron consisted of five submarines, four destroyers, an aircraft carrier, and three big battle cruisers. It appeared to head for the Mediterranean. The British Admiralty announced this morning that the British destroyer Delight has been sunk as a result of enemy bombing. The loss of life is said to be small. Sir Alan Brooke, the new commander-in-chief of the British Army, is said to have almost completely recast the ideas for defending this island. He believes attack is the best defense. When I was in France, it was easy to see that the idea of fighting from behind a concrete wall, like the Maginot Line, had bred a spirit of inertia among the French soldiers. With this in mind, Britain's new commander-in-chief is expected to order many of the concrete barriers which have been thrown across British highways to be taken down. When I made a tour of the island defenses a few weeks ago, I was impressed by the number of large pointed concrete blocks which had been erected in such a short time. They resembled a huge concrete tooth, and the troops had nicknamed them Dragon's Teeth. Now, in the Northern Command of England, military orders have been given to remove all the double lines of these roadblocks. Single blocks are to be retained. These blocks are spaced to allow automobiles to pass, but are too narrow to allow tanks through. If an invasion were attempted, I was told that even the narrow space between the blocks would be filled in. If this great number of roadblocks is to be cut back from the road, as I am told they are, it is an indication that the defenses on the coast of Britain have now been improved tremendously. So if Germany tries to land troops and tanks, a war of fast movement will begin. The roadblocks, which would interfere with the passage of British troops too, will be out of the way now. It appears that while British troops were being trained and before the large supporting troops from the Empire had been landed, a defense of this island was based on a system of road-by-road barricades. But the invasion did not come, and now the British Army is disposed over every strategical area, we are told. In its mobility lies its greatest strength, thinks the new commander-in-chief. This war differs from others in the opportunity it offers for bravery by civilians. Since the old idea of a war of fronts had to be abandoned because of the bombing plane, with only the blue sky marking the limits to which the front could extend, thousands of civilians have found themselves on the battle line. England has recognized the acts of bravery performed by its civilians by frequent awards of the Order of the British Empire. An 18-year-old volunteer air raid warden got one this week for his bravery in saving people imprisoned in the ruins of a bombed house. Britain is worried over the possible effects of a restricted diet on its population if this becomes a war of starvation. Therefore, production on a vast scale of synthetic vitamin C will begin at a newly erected factory. These tablets will be stored in various parts of the country and may be issued to the population as a substitute for green vegetables and fresh fruit if a shortage of such things becomes acute over here. With the greatest battles of this war now going on far from England, reports from Africa tell of the British siege of the Italian garrisons on the Abyssinian-Sudan frontier. The Italians, with large reinforcements, captured these outposts just before the rainy season began. They believe they can hold them until mid-September, when they are prepared to make large-scale advances into British Africa. The British believe they can starve them out before this, and every day a determined British sniping effort goes on from the wastelands outside the villages.
Meantime, the Italian Air Force is attempting to feed the beleaguered garrison by parachuting down supplies from the air.
Now the news from the German capital, reported by William Shira.
Berlin. No less authoritative neutral sources than Secretary of State Hull and Secretary of War Stimson are cited today by the German radio to back up Germany's argument that the British haven't a chance to win the coming showdown with the Reich. No one here accuses members of the present American government with being unduly prejudiced in favor of Germany, hence the weight which their opinions carry among the people here. The German radio first takes up the speech of Mr. Hull in Havana, in which he advised his fellow American delegates that they must all reckon after the war with European markets which would be dominated by authoritarian regimes. The German radio jumps on that remark and concludes, "This shows that in the United States they count on a defeat of Britain." According to the German radio, Secretary of War Stimson, speaking before a congressional committee, also held out no hope for Britain. The German radio quotes him as saying, quote, "Britain will be overpowered in a short time and the British fleet will pass under enemy control," unquote. This remark of the American Secretary of War, comments the local radio, is a new sign that in the United States they hold that England hasn't a chance now. Announcement by Great Britain that henceforth it will blockade the entire continent is scoffed at in Berlin, at least by the editorial writers. They doubt that Britain has the Navy for the job. They think there will be plenty of holes in that blockade. Welcome also in Berlin are dispatches from Washington saying that President Roosevelt insists that American vessels keep the last bridge to Europe open by maintaining their voyages to Portugal and Spain. Now that the German army is on the Spanish border, that gives Germany an outlet to Spain and therefore indirectly to America. Incidentally, now that Germany has an air service with Spain, we're getting our Clipper mail from home regularly and very fast. Yesterday, we received American newspapers and magazines for the first 3 weeks of July, but we haven't received any for June yet. Well, if the continent is being blockaded, say the German newspapers this morning, it isn't a one-way business. So is Great Britain being blockaded. And they point to figures released by the High Command yesterday, which declared that 1,270,000 tons of British shipping had been sent to the bottom since June 25th. They also point to the damage done to British ports, and the fact that, according to American dispatches, the Port of London, greatest in the world, has been closed. Of course, no one here denies that the British blockade is making itself felt in certain ways. For one thing, in the shortage of fodder, especially in such occupied countries as Holland and Denmark. My remarks last night about the necessity of reducing poultry and livestock in Holland because of the shortage of fodder seem to have achieved some publicity among other places in Britain. German circles, commenting on my broadcast today, pointed out that it was not Germany's fault if this had to be done, and that it wasn't their fault if Holland and Denmark had built up a livestock business based on the importation of foreign fodder. The point the Germans make is that the shortage of fodder is due to the British blockade, not to any German measures. They remind us also that since Holland and Denmark have lost their principal market, which was Britain, it is natural that there should be a surplus of livestock and poultry in these occupied countries. Incidentally, I'm told that some of the Danish livestock, instead of being slaughtered, is being sent to Poland, where it's a welcome addition to the much poorer Polish breed of livestock. The Supreme Council of the Soviet meets today in Moscow to deliberate on the request of the Baltic states for incorporation into the Soviet Union. There seem to be no doubts as to the Soviet decision. Already today, the German radio reports that all Lithuanian ships at sea have been ordered to report to Russian ports. The three children of King Leopold were brought back to him yesterday from Portugal in a German Lufthansa airplane. Reich Marshal Göring made the arrangements. The children were driven from the airport in Brussels to the palace assigned to the king. This is William L. Shira in Berlin, returning out of Columbia, New York.
This is New York, and here in our New York studios is Linton Wells to give you more news and his analysis of developments. Mr. Wells.
Virginio Gaeta, the Italian editorialist, and Dr. Lay, the Nazi front, labor front leader, have suddenly come out with statements which hinted further delay in the long-expected Nazi-fascist attempt to subjugate Britain through invasion and aerial blitzkriegs. But there is a disposition in British-American quarters to the belief that a concentrated attack on the British Isles will be launched at midnight August 4th, for which, as Larry Lasseur reminded us from London this morning, Britain is well prepared, although Germany doesn't think so,
as Bill Shire told us from Berlin. Midnight, August 4th, will be the 26th anniversary of England's previous declaration of war against Germany, following the invasion of Belgium by Kaiser Wilhelm's forces. That moment, it is being argued, would be psychological for Germany to set about in earnest to wreak vengeance upon England for what Hitler regards as a multitude of disasters and dishonors arising out of that declaration of war and the subsequent Treaty of Versailles. So determined is Hitler to destroy all possible reminders of the former German defeat, the German laborers are now said to have eliminated completely all trace of the spot in the Compiègne forest where the World War Armistice was signed, and Hitler forced the capitulation of France last June. The railway dining car in which both armistices were signed has been removed to Berlin, but all marks indicating its position have been destroyed. It is understood that the Germans will plant a thick forest in the area in the hope of hiding the spot forever. That is reminiscent of the deathbed orders of that world's greatest conqueror, Genghis Khan. History records that after Genghis Khan's followers buried his body, they planted a forest so extensive and so thick that the burial place has not been located to this day. In southeastern Europe, the situation has grown relatively quieter. Romania has obeyed Hitler's command for a Pax Balkana and opened negotiations with Bulgaria for a settlement of Bulgar claims for restoration of the Dobruja and an exchange of populations. Similar negotiations are expected to be started with Hungary regarding the transfer of Transylvania. There is increasing Romania opposition to the Transylvania settlement, and the Gigurtu cabinet is expected to resign. But there seems to be little reason to doubt that agreement satisfactory to Hitler will be reached. In the meantime, Russia is keeping a watchful eye on proceedings, and observers are beginning to speculate about Turkey adopting a more favorable attitude toward the Axis powers, which would certainly weaken Britain's position further in the eastern Mediterranean. Reports are current that Hitler and Mussolini are promising Turkey a chunk of Greece and other concessions in return for at least a little more sympathy and cooperation as starters. Well, the long-discussed new foreign policy of Japan was announced today, and it bodes little good for any Occidental power except Germany and Italy. Japanese Foreign Minister Matsuoka's formal statement said bluntly that Japan intends to clean house internally and form a sort of fascist government and to create a new order in the greater East Asia with Japan, China, and Manchukuo as the central link. Moreover, he said that Nippon is resolved to surmount all obstacles, material and spiritual, which might lie in her path. In other words, try and stop us. This declaration followed close on the heels of another by the Japanese Navy spokesman who turned shipments of aviation gasoline and scrap iron as the United States' effort to bring economic pressure upon Japan, and therefore an unfriendly act which is certain to cause repercussions. While the Japanese foreign minister did not go into detail regarding future Nippon-Japanese action, his statement said that Japan's first move will be directed toward a settlement of the China war, and thereafter constructive and flexible measures will be taken to deal with drastic changes in the international situation. Later on, Premier Prince Konoya gave support to these statements, but in none of them was there any reference to specific moves against French Indochina, the Dutch East Indies, or the far eastern territories of Britain and the United States. However, it was said that Japan intends to establish a zone of stability which will embrace not only Japan, Manchukuo, and China, but also French Indochina and the Netherlands East Indies. This would seem policy envisages bringing these areas under the aegis of the rising sun, despite Secretary of State Hull's frequently voiced objection to any change in the status quo in the Far East. What action the United States will take in such an eventuality remains to be seen, but it probably will be confined to protests.
And with this news by Linton Wells from New York, Columbia concludes another morning report of European developments. Larry Lesser was heard reporting from London. William L. Shirer reported from Berlin. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.